Hey, Rhett. Hey.
Hey.
There you go. Can you hear me now?
I can.
All right. There you are.
I can see you've been busy.
Why do you say that?
Because you're wearing a Titleist golf hat.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got to have the right attitude.
You were going
right?
Golfing the last time we talked.
Yeah, not today. But
yeah. Well,
I wear
last month you were on your way out the door.
I think I was because we only had one call or something. Yeah, it was everybody was canceling, so I took advantage of it. Work on my game. So how are you been? What's on your mind?
Good. You know, we've been putting into effect what we discussed the last time. Apparently, I'm leading the office in Morgan Stanley Online now.
Wow, good for you.
Well, it's a small office. But it's part of my practice now, so even clients that I think if you'd asked them even 4 months ago if they'd ever be on Morgan Stanley Online, the answer was no. And now they are, so.
Great. Well, it's a commitment of time and energy to get them online, but once they're online, they will always be online, and that's leverage. So,
well, I think I told you, if you need to change anything for your withdrawal, it'll take 3 weeks via mail. When you're on Morgan Stanley Online, it takes, you know, less than a day.
Perfect. What else?
Well, got a new client. That was good.
Good.
I had another client add money. I think I would have gotten that any. Well, I don't know actually, because he was always a good client, but apparently his aunt, who's also a client of mine, called up and said, you know, so-and-so's been given a buyout opportunity. And he was asking her out loud. He just didn't know if he could do it. And she goes, you dummy, Rhett's got all that online with about you. And he does that routinely. And he was, he wasn't putting it together. And we had just done a GPS not 2 months earlier.
Oh, that's funny.
Kind of funny.
So did he take it then, huh?
I hate to say it, but I did scold him about it. I said, why is it I'm finding out from your aunt that you got a retirement buyout offer?
So he took it, huh?
Yes. It was a slam dunk, not because of the size of the account necessarily. I mean, it hit my minimum as we discussed, but he does not require any significant income. I mean, literally Social Security is about $800 more a month than he needs.
Wow.
Talking about a guy who's made a good living. Very modest means. Just keep him in hunting and
right. Keep him in camo gear and rifles.
That's pretty much it. And that's the other rule is during turkey season, don't bother calling him in the morning.
Right.
Because he isn't there. But he is the only one I've ever seen when I went into his living room, and it wasn't a big living room. It's probably as big as most people's bedrooms. He had a full-sized mounted mountain lion.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That he had, it's either he or his father had killed with a pistol.
Oh my God.
And I said, that seems odd. And he goes, but that's how you do it. The dogs tree the mountain lion and then you just shoot it.
Wow.
So sounds a little less than
Fair.
I didn't say this to him, but it was pretty impressive, but it sounded not so fair. It's not like he was out in the world, you know. I mean, he was, but
I would have said, I would have said, the only thing that saved me was my pistol. He got me up against a tree, and I was stuck, and I either shot him or he killed me. Makes a better story.
But other than that, please, it has been, I think we discussed, I don't know, my wife and I have not decided when, if at any time in the future, I'm sure it will happen eventually, but when the office opens, if I will be immediately going back to the office. But I will be immediately going back to the office to get my new Supernova folders.
Good.
That's what I told my wife. Good. Because I think I told you that is a terminatable offense if I went in to get my Supernova folders. That was the way it was worded to me. So.
Well, somebody has to
so
be able to go.
Supernova.
Go in there, don't they?
They go in about every other week, and that is not their job to get me my folders. But anyway, I now have Supernova notebooks, like notepads.
Okay. Good.
That's
well,
what I'm writing everything down on, and I'll just have to detach and put, you know, holes in it
right.
And plug it into the notebooks when I get home or when I get
no,
to the office.
I'm like you. I mean, I've got a yellow pad and I write everything on, but it's in your folder. You know, it's just.
Yeah. Well, no, I have minor stacks of these very small. I bought a big pad that I write down notes and what the client wants, that kind of stuff. And I mark each client has their own. I got about 50 of them. And that's how it basically works. Each client has their own little notepad at the moment.
Good. That'll work fine.
My wife is thrilled that they're taking up
like
space.
And I'm glad you like it.
What?
I'm glad you like.
I do like the notebooks. It just keeps everything.
Yeah.
Keeps everything straight. But anyway, so I've been very pleased. I'm not quite up for the year, but I'm damn close. That makes sense. And I think in the current environment, that's good.
Well, that's really good. You know, especially if you took less risk.
I think I told you that. My view on risk and when to sell is when a stock hits its price target and I don't have a compelling reason to hold on to it, I'll sell, and if I don't have a compelling buy, I'll put it in cash. So I was fairly fortunate that a lot of my clients, while not in cash, they had ultra short bond funds was the position that I was parking it in, where they were traditionally fully invested with maybe me 2 or 3% in cash, and ultra short, they were up to 12 to 15, which isn't huge, but it is for me.
Right.
Because I typically stay fully invested, and so when it went down, there was some opportunity for them to move money in. And so I've actually got clients now that are up for the year, which is kind of stunning to me.
Yeah, that's really good.
Not everybody. And
that's great.
It's funny, the more aggressive they were, the more up they are. You know, the conservative people didn't lose as much, and they've rebounded very nicely as well. But some of the more aggressive clients lost more, but have had it just skyrocket back.
Yep.
You know, which is, I was not prepared for how fast, and I don't think very many people were. I was not prepared for how fast that market came back. Even my manager, Rob, was telling me he didn't have an opportunity to take advantage of it because he thought it was going to continue further down, which.
Well, we always think it's going to, yeah, we always think it's going to go up more and down more than it actually does, right?
Well, I mean, I don't, Rob is by nature and by investing more conservative than I am.
Okay.
And if Rob loses an account, it is usually because he got 4% instead of 12 because he was 30% to 40% cash, and you know he only had a 30% of it in equities to begin with. And I've never lost a client for that reason. And I think that goes along the supernova approach, that it is hardly ever, I think, the reason given is market performance as a reason a client leaves. That's just my impression. I don't have any statistics to back it up, but that's just what it is a lack of contact. And I don't mean obviously by me per se, but I think generally in the industry, it's a lack of contact, a lack of information. I think they feel neglected, and that's usually the reason that they leave.
Right.
There was a woman in our industry here by the name of Barbara Hudock, and you may know her because I'm fairly sure she did Supernova probably 18 years ago. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Do you know who she is?
No, I don't think her name's familiar, but I don't.
She left the local Merrill Lynch office in Williamsport. She did not have a non-compete clause signed because of when she started and how long she'd been there.
Sure.
And then she left in, I'm going to say 2000, I think, or pretty close to that. And at the time, she was managing probably $350, $400 million in assets and took them all. And what she told, what I learned from her, was it was not performance, because her performance, in my opinion, was below average, but her contact method was impeccable. The way she treated her clients, the system in which she used, and that's why I think it was Supernova, because I don't remember, I know you guys have been around that long, and I don't remember very many others that have been.
Right. Yeah, we started in the late 90s. And I took it around the country in 2000 to 2002. 2 years I spent introducing Supernova to the country. But I didn't, you know, I covered the Midwest, so I did not get as far east as Pennsylvania. But I did go to all the markets in the country, but my personal, you know, I had 14 states as a district director. So,
well, it just sounds very familiar. Taught me. Her advertising, because she went independent, and her advertising in the area is, you know, our $1 million minimum allows us to give. I mean, it was right off of your playbook when she left.
Perfect.
And it was really kind of amazing is when she left the office. She hired our receptionist, who had a great relationship with everyone's client, had retired 6 months previously. She hired her and then rented office space across the hall from our office. How does that?
Yeah, it's pretty gutsy.
Literally. Well, not only that, prior to that, they had built her an office suite on the second floor of our building. So in reality, when she went out on her own, she was closer to our lobby than she was when she worked for us.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was so funny because there was a manager at the time by the name of Carla Fisher, who was a huge benefit to me because she said, look around the office and determine who is an advisor whose type of business and the way that they do business is somebody you would want to emulate, and then do it. And I interviewed, that's a weird way to put it, but three advisors, and they were all very different. Barbara was the massive team. You know, she did $1.2 million in business, and in 2000, that was a lot.
Right.
And she had probably 5 or 6 employees that she paid. You know, in addition to herself, her firm supplied CA and a partner. So there were 8, 9 people in the team. And then you had Joe Kramer, who is a quintessential stock jockey. You know, been in the business forever. If his phone rang after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it was a wrong number because he got to the office at 4 or 5 and he was gone at 1. That was it. Didn't matter what the market did. And his view was, I have to pay for my seat. And he told me this, I have to pay for my seat every day. And he did it with trades. You know, that was the type of business he had. And he did, you know, 700,000 or 800,000. And I just realized that was not the future fairly quickly. You could see managed money was just coming out, fee-based assets. And at the same time, Barbara became the number one producer in the office. And there was a guy that worked there by the name of Bob Shangra, who had been the number one producer for 3 decades. And he had retired, and his son, maybe 6 months earlier, and his son took over. And Barbara was about to pass him. And so he came in, you know, practically wearing a red cape, you know, to keep himself number one. And he came in and he did a ton of business. But the market went up 10% that quarter. And Barbara, who is 90%+ annuitized, saw every bit of business she went up dramatically. And he couldn't keep pace. And it was, you know, because he had to come in and he did all these trades. And the next month, she just blew right by him. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because his son was watching. And he immediately, with his father's blessing, started to move the business into a fee-based platform because he knew that was the future. So I kind of looked at that, you know, as much as I like Joe, that's not the kind of business that's going to be there in the future. And then I interviewed a guy by the name of Michael Bush, who is still over at Merrill. And while I didn't like some of the aspects of his business, I did like it was fee-based. It was a small group. You know, 2 FAs with 2 assistants that they both had, kept the expenses down. They did it. And he's probably still the number one producer over at Merrill now by default because Barbara left and Bob's son actually passed away a few years later, which in his sleep, which was not a good thing. But anyway, so that's where I got the, and then when Tim came with this opportunity to have the firm pay the bulk of the Supernova fee, I kind of jumped at it. So it wasn't, the only other I approached Mark about it, Huffman, and he already did it, apparently, or something close to it. When he was POA or PDD or whatever the hell they're called over at Merrill, you know, the pre-advisor, build your book stage, you're on a salary, go through our program, kind of. Anyway. So, what pearls of wisdom do you have for me this month? What do you think I ought to be doing?
Well, I think if I were you, I would use this opportunity to just kind of go through the 5-star model, accountability, and just set some goals and then hold yourself accountable to those things. So, for example, if you're doing a good job on getting yourself organized with and getting your clients organized around the internet, so do the same thing for the GPS or for, you know, the tools that you use for financial planning, the life view. I know they don't
count. I use the GPS more than the – I know this is going to sound funny. I use GPS more than I do Life View.
Well, I think they don't count Life View yet, but they will.
They count it.
Do they? Okay.
You mean for the percentage bump?
Yeah.
I think – I don't know.
They don't
that isn't the reason.
They're supposed to count it like in August or something like that.
Yeah, it's – That isn't the reason why, though. It's not. Right. I know that sounds kind of odd. Don't get me wrong. It's not a deterrent that I get a paid an extra 1%. But that isn't. I use the GPS because I think it speaks on a level that the client understands and appreciates more, whereas the life view very often was too long in the weeds for the average client. You know, they like the idea that, hey, it said they could retire, but the GPS does that in colors.
Okay.
You know, have you ever seen it?
No.
Green, red, yellow, and red. They get that. They get those things regularly. That show them usually and more often during volatile markets. So it's very proactive. It's very user friendly. I just did one for, we started a client on it a month and a half ago. And then with COVID coming out and the fact that he's an asthmatic, his wife is now panicked. So we were able to do a what if scenario. Hey, can I retire now? And yes, he could. Now, whether or not he actually does it, that's between he and his wife. But
sure. What percent of your clients, let's say 250 and above, have a GPS?
Total client of my clients is 22%. 250 and above, it's got to be about 40. And I just started making it part of my routine book about 3 weeks into the COVID thing.
Really good. Yeah. So that's what I mean. If we say, okay, you know, what's your goal? Well, I'd like to be at, you know, those over 250, I'd like to be at 100%. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's what we go for then, you know?
That is the goal.
Okay.
And then you think about it, I know some of the guys looked at it like, okay, I'm going to do GPSs on my smaller accounts that I'm about to get a cut in, you know, and I looked at it the exact opposite. I was like, no, I want to do the GPSs on all my larger accounts so I can get a 1% bump on those.
Right.
Do I really care that an account that I have that's $110,000 that goes down 1% on my payout? It didn't make sense to me at all. And then, you know, and then Supernova came along and basically told me you needed to find a place to put those clients other than your book.
Right. Implementation. That's your 24-month calendar. Are you using it?
Say that again. You bleeped out.
Okay. The implementation, director of implementation is in charge of the investment process, but actively using the 24-month calendar to make sure you implement all the financial plans?
No, because we were just getting the hang of that when we left the office. We're using a calendar, but not your 24 months. So we're actually inputting each appointment.
Right, but here's what I want.
It of course,
I want
that.
Like
yours.
And I want the, you know, the 12-4-2s.
Yes.
But what I want you to do is
on your calendar. I don't care about my calendar.
Or your calendar.
I care about, I'm not saying it because it's yours. I'm saying it because it saves time for Tracy. She inputs one client and it pre-fills the entire calendar going forward.
Right.
I like.
True.
Right now, it doesn't do that. You know, it needs to be done. That's all.
Okay.
We kind of dropped the ball if you remember, we were having an issue with it just before, about 3 weeks before the COVID happened. And unfortunately, I went on vacation.
Okay, so that's just something that's so that
that's
would be under that would be under brand management. Okay. That would be
all right.
Director of brand management would be to get the 24-month calendar up on the right calendar and using an agenda and executive summary?
Well, we use the agenda and the executive summary, but right, not the calendar.
Okay, but that's good. That's okay. So you need something to do there, and that's what you need. That will be good. Now, back to implementation. The brand, the 24-month calendar is, for the next 2 months, we're going to focus on liability management. We're just going to go through and make sure everybody has their liabilities in the right place. And they're taking advantage of lower rates in mortgages or securitized loans or whatever. That's going to be our project for the next 2 months. So you have a calendar of tactical and strategic initiatives that you're going to take in order to educate the clients and to move them along their path.
Okay.
So that's a great project for you. There's a 24-month calendar in my workbook that you can borrow and just use it. Because there are things that are calendar driven, like required minimum distributions, but there are places for things like risk management, which would be everything associated with insurance. So it's a way of implementing the plans on the topics that we typically don't get around to, like long-term care. And with everybody wanting to age in place, long-term care becomes even more important than ever. That's actually a good topic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. It's a topic that everybody needs to talk about.
Right.
It can be a difficult conversation, but let me rephrase that. It was difficult for me and my parents.
It always is. Yeah.
It always is.
Yeah. And I actually had to apologize to him because of it. I didn't really start talking to my dad until he was in his late 70s, which a lot could have gone wrong at that point.
Right.
But it would be a much easier conversation than for me to have with my clients, rather.
Okay, so we talked about brand management, getting the 12-4-2 calendar up and running. That would be a good assignment for the month. And then in marketing, that's the seven different strategies. And you don't want to try and do all seven, but an initiative like this is sort of like, okay, Rob, this is the marketing idea I'm going to use for the month in terms of prospecting. What do you think? This is my goal. Okay. So that you need to kind of, you got to give me some feedback on that right now.
Okay. I'm sorry. What?
So what do you think? What's your marketing initiative? Your prospecting initiative here.
Oh, prospecting. I know it's something, it's all through current clients currently.
Okay.
Current relationships. Outside of current clients, it's fairly difficult because unless they have some sort of impending thing, like a retirement question or something like that, they don't want to see you. And I've noticed that although my clients like most of the technology, let me rephrase that, they tolerate it more than anything else. They don't like it, but they tolerate it.
Yeah.
Prospects, I have not had any luck since this virus came up in a referral resulting in, with the exception of the one that I just got.
Right.
But that was a referral from a client. Previous to that, it's no...
But that was without you asking, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I have been asking, but I have not had I can't say I've had good luck. And maybe it's, maybe I'm presenting it wrong. I don't know. But my, the people I am asking have been unwilling to risk. How did one guy, the impression I got was to risk offending somebody they know by suggesting that they reach out to some, and I said, we could do it completely remotely, but there's been a real hang up about that due to the virus. And maybe I'm not, but I try and position it as it, look, it doesn't have to be a face-to-face meeting, but your friend may need this. And certainly if it's not client related, it's much more difficult to get referrals. If it isn't, well, referrals are almost always client related, but it's been very difficult to get in front of people without a referral too.
Well, one of the comes to mind is this early retirement. You know, that was clearly a decision that they needed help on.
Yeah,
that's usually not a solo event. Usually there's a number of people that have that opportunity and that decision to be made.
Yes. And I did ask, but I have not heard anything yet.
Well, one of the things to offer is a seminar.
Is a what?
Is a seminar. Offer an online Zoom seminar.
Oh, an online seminar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean they've got to make a decision, right? And so they need information. So
I did not even think about an online seminar.
I mean, you can do an online conference call like this, or you can do it with, you know, they don't have to plug in the video just like you didn't. They can just plug in
the video.
The audio.
Okay. I'm ashamed to say I didn't think of it like that, but I should have. I mean, all the people that need to stay in touch with me for work are doing so online. Why in the hell didn't I? And I do it with my clients. I don't understand why I didn't have I just had a complete block when it came to the prospecting with it.
You're really just running an educational seminar, and that's the way you want to think. You know, you're a connector, you're a person that's there to help others. Don't think of it as prospecting, think of it as helping others.
Well, you'd be proud of me. That was the way I worded it. Is there anybody else in the same situation that you are that I can help?
Right. Well, one of the things to do is to not do that. And the reason that people do not like essay questions.
Not do what?
Don't ask them essay questions. You want to do some brainstorming. So what you say, like I would say to you, okay, Rhett, we're getting towards the end of our engagement, right? So what I'd like to do today with you is to do some brainstorming as to who would value this as much as you have, and would that be okay? And you'd say, sure, why not, right? It's just brainstorming. Okay, here's the way it will work. What we'll do is we'll do three consecutive circles. All right? And the inner circle will be the people that you really know well. Those people in your office, the people that you've known over the years, people that you think would be a good fit. Then we'll go to the next circle, which would be people in your firm, maybe in your, you know, in your city, in your former offices, things like that. And then the bigger circle is anybody else that you know across the country that you think would really value the things that you have valued from Supernova. Would that be okay? And you go, okay, sure. So then we start with the inner circle. All right, let's just make sure we don't forget anybody. So the people that you work with, who of those do you think would value this as much as you have? You see the difference, what I'm doing? So how would you do that with your clients? You'd do the same thing. You'd make the inner circle their family and closest friends. Okay. And then the next circle would be their neighbors, people they play golf with, people that they know socially, people they know well, but not their family, not their closest friends. And then the outside circle, or the larger circle, would be people that you think would be amazing if I could get them. They'd be terrific people. You just don't know them as well, but they're highly qualified, meaning they have a lot of money. Okay? And then you, what you do is you brainstorm, and you get, let's say you and I could probably come up with four or five names of people that you know that, you know, all things being equal, would be a good fit for me. And then what I would do would be to say, okay, let's circle back and prioritize these people. So you tell me, of the people that we've named, who do you think would be the best fit for me, or would be the person that you think would need it the most? And then we just rank them from first to last. Doesn't have to be perfect. Then what the next step is, we go back, circle back, and we take the top person, and you and I ask you to profile them. Because you're going to be able to tell me a tremendous amount about that person that I'm going to have to pull out of them when I try to profile them. Okay? Not that it's not, it's not, there's nothing confidential about this. This is just style and, you know, what's he like, personality. And so you can add tremendous color to this and be very helpful when I'm talking to that person. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
And so you're doing the same thing. So you're saying, okay, prioritize the people. Okay, of the people we've talked about, this one, okay, this one. Let's talk about your brother, Bob. He's selling his business. Tell me all about Bob and his family. It didn't take long. Take 5 minutes. All right. Now, here's the key. Mm-hmm. You see how I've maintained control the whole way, whereas you gave up control immediately. You see the difference? You gave up control.
Yeah.
Who do you know? No one. Okay. Bye. I've never had a question where the person wasn't highly likely to say yes. All right. I'm making it very easy on them to say yes and to follow the script with me. So now I continue that. Now I've got him profiled. We both agree he's a good fit. Now what do we need? We need an introduction, right? We don't want a phone number. That starts the game over again. We want an introduction from the person that has just profiled them. So I ask him, okay, Rhett, you know your brother better than anybody else that I know of. How would you suggest that we meet? Okay. And he's not probably going to know. He's not going to have the answer. So you come up with three different choices. Now the personal introduction is probably off the table, but that's okay. How about if we do a Zoom? All right. How about if we do a conference call? And those would be about the only things. If he really thinks you're terrific and his brother's terrific, we should do one of those two things. But if it's if you're down to person number six on the list, and now it's not as personal, it's not as urgent, then we'll do an email introduction. That's the third thing that's acceptable. Nothing else is acceptable.
Okay.
Okay, do you see what I'm talking about here, how that would work? Now, here's the final close, okay? Now, if he says, okay, we'll do a conference call, we're not done, right? When are we going to do it? So what we say is this, okay, today is what, half the people don't know what day it is now with COVID. So you got to take a second. Today's Monday, right? All right. So when will you see your brother? When will you talk to him? Well, I talk to him every day. Okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we schedule it for this time next week? Would that work? Good. Conference call this time next week. You're going to talk to your brother this week. If I don't hear from you by Friday, how shall I get back in touch with you? Just email me or just call me or whatever. Or I'll make sure I do it. Okay. If I don't hear from you Friday, I'll email you. How's that? Just a reminder.
Okay. Sounds good. I get it.
See what I mean? See, now I've completely controlled the whole thing. The key is
the whole thing from start to finish.
Exactly.
All right.
Now you don't do this with people that don't like you. Okay.
I don't have any clients that don't like me.
Exactly. You see? And so you should do this with every single client. Not for your sake, for God's sakes, but for the client's sake. That's what you've got to get in your head, is that if you don't do this, it's malpractice.
Gotcha.
Because they could be with Bernie Madoff. Okay? And that's what you've got to get in your head. If they don't come with me, they're probably either going to do it on their own and screw it up, or they're going to get somebody that's a bad person.
Maybe not a bad person, but somebody who doesn't know what they're doing.
Well, there's a lot of bad people too. And if they say, oh, I don't think that had ever happened. Well, just watch American Greed. Okay. There's an unlimited number of bad people out there trying to steal.
I did come across, this was a few years ago, a friend of my father-in-law's, we had started to talk about it, and he said he lost all of his money in an ING variable annuity. And I was like, okay, first of all, that's virtually impossible, you know, because it's
right.
A variable annuity with funds, or it's a fixed annuity that's a loan to the insurance company, and ING is still a viable entity. And then upon further digging, that's what I found out, that his financial advisor had never made the investment in ING.
And stole the money.
Taken his $250,000. Yeah. Which I couldn't for the life, but I couldn't for the life of me understand. He would still tell people he lost money in the market. That is inaccurate. And I can tell he never went after him legally. So there's a huge hole in this whole thing for me.
Rhett, I got to take this. I got to take this call. Okay.
Listen,
thanks,
we're
buddy.
Good. We're
all
good.
Right. Thank you.
You bet. Talk to you later.
Bye bye. Hello, Rob Knapp. Yes. Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Yeah, I am.